Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. Quadriplegics slamming wheelchairs in a hardcore game of rugby, not a typical Hollywood theme. But when the documentary Murderball hit theaters this month, it hit hard, and it's challenging our idea of what it means to be quadriplegic. Murderball follows a team of tough-as-nails quad rugby players who play to win. These guys may be in wheelchairs, but they're ready to rumble. Sure, they all have a wrenching story to tell about what landed them in a chair, a fall, a bar fight, a drunken car wreck. And Murderball shows us what happens after that, the daily struggle of being a quad. But that's not really what it's about. This is the tale of rugged athletes who play rugby in wheelchairs, who qualify for the 2004 Paralympics in Athens, who go head-to-head with arch-rival Team Canada, tough-talking, rough-playing, and yes, good-looking, sexy young athletes who just happen to be on wheels. Here, Team USA member Robert Lugiano explains how the game is played as it's played.
The objective basically is to inbound the ball. We play on a regulation basketball court. You go from one end to the other end.
Stop the ball!
Two wheels have to cross over the line with possession of the ball. And you get 1 point. The other guys stop you by slamming their chair into you.
Help him! Dave! Help him!
You have to dribble the ball or pass to a teammate once every 10 seconds. But other than that, it's basically kill the man with the ball.
Tonight on Point, on the 15th anniversary of the Americans with Disabilities Act, at a time when war is sending too many young Americans home with missing limbs and disabilities, Murderball steps in to affirm unconquerable life. You can join the conversation tonight. Have you watched a game of quad rugby? Have you seen Murderball? What do you think? Are you inspired, put off by the rumble, turned on by the zeal? You can join us tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining me now from Austin, Texas, is Mark Zupan. He is a 30-year-old tattooed, goateed quad rugby player for Team USA and one of the leaders of Murderball. Mark Zupan, thanks so much for being with us tonight.
Thanks for having me.
And with us from San Francisco, Dana Adam Shapiro, co-director of Murderball, the production that won the Documentary Audience Award at the 2005 Sundance Film Festival and is grabbing attention across the country. The film is based on an article he first wrote for Maxim magazine. Dana Adam Shapiro, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
I should note as well, you've got a new novel out, I hear, Every Boy. We'll keep an eye out for that. Mark Zupan, I wish you'd take us a little bit into this. There's so much to talk about tonight, but give us a sense of how this game is played, what your equipment looks like. We heard Robert Lugiano giving us a kind of description there, but put us on the court. What does this Murderball wheelchair look like, and how do you play?
Essentially, it's something that you would see in a Mad Max film. The sport's kind of like, it's like the NFL meets Jackass meets a bunch of guys that are just kind of have a screw loose. It's if you've seen a regular rugby chair or a regular, you know, everyday wheelchair, it looks nothing like it. It's reinforced, the wheels are cambered out. It has a cow catcher on the front, and it's pretty much used as a projectile. You know, you're strapped into this thing and you throw your body and throw the chair at the other people as hard as you can to try to hit, stop, knock them out of the chair.
A kind of combination of rugby and demolition derby, very Mad Max looking, as you say, Mark. I mean, these chairs have been through an unbelievable beating, but so have you and your teammates. I mean, this is one completely rough sport.
Yeah, but that's the fun in it. I mean, that's the competitive edge. That's the allure. Where can you hit somebody as hard as you possibly want to and can and get rewarded for it? So, I mean, the sport's not just all hidden. There's a lot of tactics and
yes, we see it.
And, you know, ideas that go behind it.
Yeah, and high speed, almost a kind of a rough ballet going on out there sometimes as I look at it. Dana Adam Shapiro, the first time you saw it, what did you think?
Oh, wow. Well, I didn't think they were quadriplegics. I thought they were paraplegics because in my stupidity didn't think that quadriplegics could move their arms. But it was significantly more violent and louder than I had thought.
And they really go at it. Mark, what is the difference between quadra and paraplegic? And help us understand exactly what quadriplegic means. A lot of people think of that as four limbs all paralyzed.
Yeah, well, the four limbs part is correct, but it's just impairment in four limbs. It doesn't mean total paralysis. People think of quadriplegics, they think of Christopher Reeve. Well, there's a variety of quadriplegic. The disability essentially starts C1 through C6 and C7 are the cervical vertebrae. The further down you break your neck, the more mobility you will have. So that's the biggest misconception, that it's means you have no use of all four limbs, which is incorrect.
And you play at an incredibly high level on this team. Give us a sense of the range of mobility that you and your teammates have. You know, from who's got the most to who's got the least. Give us some sense of that, Mark.
Well, people are given point values depending upon their function. Now, they range from 0.5 to 3.5 in increments. They're broken up in increments of 0.5. So I would have probably one of them on the higher end of mobility. I'm a 3.
This is arm and hand function, I guess, primarily.
Yes,
you're talking
about. You're talking, I have full use of triceps, mm-hmm. forearms. My hands are just kind of a little jacked up, if you will.
Mm-hmm. And at the lesser end of functionality, mobility?
What would somebody at the lesser end of mobility?
Yeah, I mean, it's still playing.
They might have one use of a tricep, but you have use of biceps, so you can function in everyday life. You can function on the rugby court. Otherwise, you wouldn't be playing at a Paralympic level. I mean, there's no electric wheelchairs. It's not something that's going to be slow and a sport that you might sit there and go, oh, this is kind of boring. It's fast-paced and pretty interesting.
All out, all the time.
Yeah.
Dana, when you watched what was going on that court, and it's played essentially on a basketball court, but there is crashing and bashing and people being knocked over, knocked down, you know, what struck you here? I mean, this goes against a lot of stereotypes of a sort of passive, disabled person in spades. It could hardly be more opposite to that stereotype.
Yeah, I mean, I had all those stereotypes. I think most people probably don't know a quadriplegic, and so as Mark was saying, you know, the image of them is that of Christopher Reeve, someone who's in a motorized wheelchair, who's sort of at home under a blanket, you know, drinking food, and that they're fragile and soft, and a lot of people think they're retarded, and they speak loudly to them at restaurants as if they, you know, are deaf also.
Yeah.
So, you know, we brought all of those misconceptions and stereotypes and ignorance with us. It wasn't like, you know, we weren't insiders who went into this subject and decided to make a film. We were outsiders, and you know, the film was our own discovery process as well.
Mark, when the film crew showed up, when the idea of making a film was put to you and others on the team, were you open to it? Did you feel like, you know, you were under a microscope here in a way that was welcome or unwelcome? What was your response?
No, I myself was pretty open to it right away. It was interesting, just because when it got proposed to me, I was like, sure, you know, that sounds like it was cool. And you get to know the directors. I mean, I got to know Dana, I got to know Henry, I got to know the producer, Jeff Mandel. And once you get to know, I mean, immediately Dana and I had similar interests, and it seemed like we came from similar backgrounds, so it was easy to, you know, you sit there and you talk about everything and anything, and you become friends. And once you become friends, then obviously more access is going to be granted. It's just going to be like, oh yeah, well, my friends are coming to watch play rugby, and you don't even notice the camera for the most part. And in that aspect, I mean, that was good. That was good for them. It was good for us, because if nothing else came out of this movie, I mean, I got 3 really good friends, and it's it's fun. I mean, I'm going to end up, every time I go to New York, I'll stay at Dana's house. Stay in his family room.
Yeah.
His girlfriend puts out the air mattress.
Now Mark's been staying at fancy hotels.
Well,
but once that dies down, he's got an air bed when he needs it.
Right, yeah. A kind of intimacy that you all have now, and an intimacy shared here, Dana, very richly with the viewing audience. I mean, you must be getting some incredible response to this. There's a lot of storylines running through the bang and crash play here as well. This is a film with a lot of emotion. I've seen it in every person I've watched who saw the film and felt it in myself. It really opens up a new perspective on what it means to be in this situation.
Well, thanks very much. I mean, you said storylines, and that's really that was the concern. That was the biggest thing for us, was to find storylines. And you know, it was always like, is this a 15-minute segment on Real Sports, or is this a film? And you know, we knew that this couldn't be just a sports movie. I mean, at the end of the day, there's probably about 8 minutes of sports in this film.
Mm-hmm.
And what propels it, and the biggest moments are taking place off the court. And they are the stories of Joe and his son. They're the stories of Mark and his best friend Chris Igo, and they're the stories of Keith, who was recently injured just before we started filming. And you know, the movie was funnier than we ever expected.
Mm.
It was, it was closer in terms of the competition. I mean, these games were really edge of your seat stuff. I mean, I think you come in thinking, well, it's not going to be that sort of competitive, again, because you're just sort of thinking that, oh, well, quadriplegic sports are a little bit slower.
Right, what could it be?
A little bit softer. They're not going to be. Meanwhile, these guys, you know, Joe
Watch
is like, practically, he's like, you know, veins popping out of his head, and everyone's screaming, and there's like real nationalism involved, and violence and revenge.
The pinning the needle on all of those. Dana Adams Shapiro, Mark Zupan, please stand by. We are talking tonight about Murder Ball, the movie, the sport, quadriplegic rugby, and the wild new metaphor for struggle and triumph from the wheelchair or any other way. You can join us tonight. Have you seen the film, the sport, the astounding grit of these athletes? Wheelchair users, are you inspired? We're at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking about Murder Ball.
Swab him! Swab him! Swab him! No, no! Swab him!
It's a documentary film. It's a sport, quadriplegic rugby. And it is a powerful new metaphor for struggle and triumph from the wheelchair or any other way. We're talking tonight with Mark Zupan, 30-year-old quad rugby player for Team USA. He joins us tonight from Austin, Texas, and by Dana Adams Shapiro, co-director of Murder Ball, author of the new novel Every Boy. He joins us from San Francisco tonight. You can join us as well. Have you seen the film, the sport, the grit of these athletes? Wheelchair users, are you inspired? Able-bodied listeners, are you enlightened? Are you humbled? Are you put off or inspired to see the disabled embracing such mayhem and being elevated by it? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Michael is calling from Lexington, Kentucky. Hello, Michael. You're on the air.
Hi.
How's it going?
Mark, I enjoyed the movie. Everybody else, I enjoyed the movie, too. Mark's the one I remember most, though.
describe Mark Zupan for us. You've seen the film, Michael.
He's an animal. I was amazed. I'm actually a psychologist that works in a rehab hospital down here in Kentucky and work with folks with spinal cord injury. And it's interesting to see. I'm actually involved with the Spinal Cord Injury Association here in the state as well.
Uh-huh.
And my coworkers is the athletics director for the hospital. And I've seen a lot of the wheelchair basketball, and I've heard a lot of talk about quad rugby, but I've never seen it, and had some of the same thoughts about it that the directors were talking about, how, oh gosh, it's going to be a little bit easy, a little bit light. And I thought, you know, gosh, so hard to be a quad. And I saw this movie, and I was so humbled by what I saw. I was like, heck, I couldn't do that stuff.
Michael, you work with quadriplegics regularly. Here's this team. I mean, Mark Zupan, for starters, just muscles all over the place, tattooed up and down. This fierce, I saw it somewhere described as a prison goatee, and fierce eyes to match.
Oh,
how extreme or how unusual are the athletes you saw in this film? How out of the ordinary are they?
For folks with quadriplegia?
Yes.
Um, You know, Mark is, you know, he can tell you better than I can, but, you know, I'm imagining like a C6, C7. And, but, you know, he's got some pretty good function there. But a lot of the other guys in the team, too, you can see that there's a lot, there are some with higher injuries that are a lot more affected by their spinal cord injury. But the activity level is just amazing. And I think that it's probably not terribly atypical for folks with quadriplegia, but it's really amazing to see as an able-bodied person to see just how well these guys function athletically.
And were you turned off by the crash and bash, or were you inspired? And if you were inspired, exactly what was it that inspired you, Michael?
I was definitely inspired by it. It was definitely the attitude, the I'm going to win, and it doesn't matter what my disability is. It matters what I can do, because I couldn't do what those guys were doing. I can't play wheelchair basketball. Right. I can't play non-wheelchair basketball either. I'm not good at basketball, period. Yeah. But it's amazing to see what people do with the abilities they have, and that's what it's all about. In fact, I really want to get part of the movie to show it in some of the groups that we do for the new injuries, because one of the most touching scenes in the movie for me was when was it Keith, the newly injured guy?
Yes, the young man who was injured in motocross and just couldn't believe what had happened to himself.
Right. It was when he was saying he had gone home for the first time, was talking about how God, this sucks, and he had the realization of being. And his mom's like, oh, you know, it's not so bad. You got a good new apartment here. He's like, but you know, I'm living in a wheelchair. And then to see him come back to the hospital for the demonstration. And he wanted to get into that chair so badly. And, of course, the administrator is like, well, no, you know, you're fragile at this point. And right. Oh, for the love of Pete. The guy wants to get a life back because he's had to learn a new life now. Well, in some ways, there are certain things he needs to learn to do.
Absolutely, absolutely.
He's got to learn to celebrate new parts of his life. And it was just amazing and very touching for me to see that. I was choked up half this movie. And I work with, you know, these folks every day. And sometimes they get choked up, but I tell you, I was just overwhelmed emotionally with this movie.
A wave of emotion and inspiration coming right off this Mad Max court of competition. Michael in Kentucky, thanks very much for calling. Let's hear a little bit from the film Murder Ball of 24-year-old Keith Cavill. If I got that right, Dana, is that the right pronunciation?
Yeah, Cavill.
Cavill, excuse me. At this moment in the film, he had recently become quadriplegic after he was injured in a motocross accident. And then he's talking here about his rehabilitation.
When you go down to that gym, you realize how much you're broken down. You're really almost at an infant's level. You get frustrated because you can't even lift your arm up to itch your nose. Just shaking hands with somebody, I can't even make a firm grip with my hand to present myself.
Keith Cavill, inspired by the players of Murderball, Mark Zupan, when we first meet Keith, his face is just a blank of disbelief at the capacities that have been taken away from him. We watch his face fill up with hope as he watches you and the other players here. I wish you'd describe that path from, you know, that low moment when you realize what's been lost, back to where a person like you is now, where you have so much capacity. What is that journey like?
Well, I mean, the first 2 years is hard. I mean, I'm not going to lie to you. You have to learn your new body. You have to learn pretty much a new life. But, I mean, once you figure out that walking isn't the end of the world, you know, if you don't do it, you can still function. And finding rugby, I mean, what was cool about seeing Keith in the rugby chair at first was exactly how I felt. Mm. And you could see it in his face. It's like, wow, this is something I didn't even know about. This is something that gives me the freedom, gives me the competitive edge, gives me just this aspect of life that didn't know that was going to be possible.
Life is not just a bust. I can do something here, and it's exciting.
Well, yeah, I mean, but it's not necessarily just that. It's mm-hmm. It's the whole aspect of sport, and it's the whole aspect of competing again. You know, you're not just in a chair saying, oh, okay, well, this is going to be fun. I have to just go to the grocery store and go home. Right. I can actually go venture out, travel, and do stuff in the chair that I didn't think was possible.
Dana, I wish you'd give us a rundown briefly on the main characters in the film, how they got their injuries.
Sure. Well, Mark Zupan fell asleep in the back of his best friend's truck. They were out drinking at a bar, and Zupan stumbled out and didn't tell Chris and just passed out in the back of his truck, and Chris came out a few hours later, got into the truck, and ended up getting into an accident, and Zupan was thrown like 30 feet into a canal where he ended up holding onto a branch for 13 hours until some guy who was eating his lunch by the water the next day spotted him and called for help. Scott Hogsett was at a party, and he got in a little fight with someone, and the guy picked him up and threw him off a balcony and then ran down and punched him in the face. Joe Soares was born with polio in Portugal. Bob Lujano was, he's a quadruple amputee. He got his arms and legs amputated at age 8 or 9 because of a disease called meningococcosemia. And Andy Cohn got into a car accident when he was 16.
So everybody has their reason. A lot of broken necks here, but not just that. Bob, who lost even most of his forearms in addition to his full legs, but yet he's out there playing like crazy. Mark Zupan, had all of these people been athletes for a long time? Had most of you been athletes before you took to murder ball?
Yeah, I mean, it's you need to be an athlete just to get to the level, I think, of Paralympics. You can be talented as, I mean, I know I was an athlete. I played college soccer. I know Andy played high school football. I know Scott was athletic. I think he played baseball. So most of the guys on the team were athletic and still are athletic. So it helps. It helps you pick the game up a lot quicker. It helps with everything.
Dana, tell us some of the stories that are running across the court, around the court here, in the course of the film, in the course of Murder Ball.
Sure. Well, the sports story is sort of this classic revenge tale, kind of a Ali Frazier rivalry. You have Joe Soares, who's the coach of Team Canada. Joe was a former All-Star in the United States. Some say one of the best to ever play the game. He was cut in 2000. He felt very unjustly and went to Canada to coach the number 5 team in the world. And a lot of the Americans call him Benedict Arnold, and they say that he went over there for revenge just to come back and beat the Americans. So there's that plot going on, sort of a sports plot with this great rivalry. Him and Zupan do not get along at all. There's a, you know, Zupan's famous line in the movie, if Joe was on the side of the road on fire, he wouldn't piss on him to put it out. It's not something Joe liked to hear, and it's just, no. You know, those guys are really butting heads. You know, the relationship between Zupan and Iga was one that we were, you know, very interested from the beginning. The guy who was driving the car, the guy who turned him into a quadriplegic.
Best, you know, friends, and their difficulty really confronting what had happened, all that transpired on that one night.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you see Zupan dealing with this physical part of that accident, and Iga is dealing with the mental part. You know, he went through a decade of just, you know, torture, and he couldn't forgive himself, even though Zupan forgave him from the beginning. And, you know, they weren't speaking for a long time, and through the film we see them sort of dealing with those demons. And Joe, in addition to this Canadian thing, has a son who is a violin player and not a very athletic guy at all. And Joe is a very sort of great Santini character from you know, Robert Duvall, and he
gruff, driven, tough, hard as nails.
Very much so. Joe's father was a police officer, and you know, he was tough, and he hit him a little bit. And Robert is definitely sort of a sensitive violin playing guy who gets all A's. He excels in his own way, but it's a way that Joe didn't really hope for. You know, the apple fell a little far from the tree, and so, you know, we see disciplinarian Joe being a coach at home, and you know, he has a heart attack halfway through the film. And he changes.
And there is the sports story. You pick them up in a game when they're going head-to-head with Canada in Sweden, as I recall.
Yeah, I mean, the United States, I mean, just to put it in perspective, I mean, they were undefeated in international competition since the beginning of the sport. They never, ever lost a game. And then here they are going head-to-head against a former countryman who they think went to Canada to come back and beat them, and does in the beginning of this film. And it really just—I mean, Goliath fell. It was unprecedented. Everybody freaked out, and it was a huge first act for us, because the unthinkable happened.
And you track them from there all the way to Athens, where they're in the Paralympics and fighting at the very highest global levels of the sport.
Yeah, we filmed for about 2.5 years. You know, we shot over 200 hours of footage, just hoping for this rematch in Greece, and we got it. And it was just a huge surprise—the ending of this film.
Mark Zupan, out of all this life experience, you pull lessons, some big broad ones. I wish you'd share some of those with us.
Lessons
Well, I hear you. I'm reading here about your sort of Mark Zupan rules. No regrets, don't hold back, no pity necessary.
Right. Well, I mean, you have one life. You're going to make the best of what you're given or what you have been dealt. And there's so many things that you can do out there, no matter if you're in a chair, if you're not. Don't let something that scares you or something that you think you might not be able to do, well, try it. I mean, I've done more in a chair than I have able-bodied. I've been fortunate enough to meet people, to go places, to do things that would have never been possible. And just because you are in a wheelchair or you are disabled doesn't mean you can't do these things. There's ways to do them. If you put your mind towards it and you use your abilities and you use your networking, your friends, your people, and you can do it. I mean, don't let the chair keep you from doing what you want to do.
And what about people in the chair, as you put it, who aren't super athletes? Not everyone is going in. Not everyone can be coming out.
It doesn't matter if you're not a super athlete. If you want to get involved with sports, get involved with sports. If you want to get involved with art, music, whatever you want to do, it doesn't matter. Just don't let the chair keep you from doing it. I mean, the sport aspect in my case is what I excelled at. But that doesn't mean everyone's going to excel at it. But it doesn't mean you can't try.
Yeah. Dana, you learned a lot about the assumptions that people hold about quadriplegics going into this. We should take us into some of those. A lot of those got exploded in the course of this film about how they think and don't think, what they can and cannot do.
Yeah, I think that the default assumption is that they really can't do much and that their bodies are broken to the point of, you know, being pretty much incapacitated and that they need somebody around at all times to help them, to feed them, you know, to put them to bed. You know, these guys have cars that are modified so that they can drive them. Mm-hmm. They live alone. They have jobs. Bob, who's a quad amp, emails. You know, he lives alone by himself. These guys have girlfriends and they have sex, and that's something that we really get into in the movie. I mean, the movie's rated R for a reason. I mean, it wasn't even close. It's not like it's just rated R. I mean, it is rated R. There's a lot of sex. There's a lot of profanity. There's a lot of humor. And I think the assumption is that there isn't any of that stuff, that life is sort of a flat line and it's kind of boring and it's kind of sad. Meanwhile, you know, Zupan, as he was just telling you, has done more in a chair, and he'll say that, you know, that this accident, he wouldn't take it back. And when you hear that, that's a pretty shocking thing to hear. And you think, well, you don't really mean that. You're just saying that because if you didn't say that, you wouldn't be able to go on.
Yeah.
And then as you film, you realize, I mean, the fact that something that, you know, is such a horror, you know, the idea of breaking your neck, it's something I think that a lot of us grow up with as boys. You know, your mom yelling at you, you know, you're going to break your neck or you'll shoot your eye out. And the wheelchair really is, you know, the chair. It does seem like a death sentence. And then you see all these guys transforming it into something, you know, it's almost an asset to them at this point. They say, well, I would have never been a Paralympic athlete had I not been in a wheelchair. Or, you know, they really, and they're not just putting a sunny face on it.
Right. Yeah, and you can see it. There's a level of intimacy and candor here. They're young. They're bursting with life. Here from the film, Murder Ball, is Andy Kahn speaking frankly about sex.
My first full-on sex after being in a wheelchair was a very great moment in my life, just knowing that I could just still, not just the physical act, but that, you know, you could still go out one night, meet a girl, and get lucky. Things that you don't think are possible anymore.
You could get lucky, and a lot of people do in this film. Mark, I should ask, I don't know if you're with the same girl you were with in the film, but you've got a lovely girlfriend in this film, and you're both obviously having a great time.
Yeah, I mean, just because I'm a chair doesn't mean I can't score a hot chick. I mean, she puts up with me, I put up with her. We have a good relationship. It's just like anything else. I mean, some of us are pretty good looking in the film. I mean, some of us aren't. I'm not going to say that I'm striking to look at, but I mean, yeah, just because you're in a chair doesn't, it maybe even brings some intrigue into the whole situation. But it works. I mean, I have a great ass level view of the world.
And that's right where the camera is during most of this film, Dana. You filmed a lot from wheelchair level.
Yeah, I mean, we didn't want this film to be shot from the fly on the walls perspective, you know, sort of shot and told in wide angle. You know, this wasn't a movie about what it's like to be around quadriplegics. It was about what it's like to be them. and Henry shot it, and you know, the idea was we want to make it a subjective point of view. We want to put you in the chair, and so there's cameras underneath the wheelchairs, on top of the wheelchairs, even during games, so like you really feel what it's like to smash into someone head on. You feel what it's like to be, you know, roaming through a bar and looking up and having people look down at you. So, yeah, I mean, the idea was really to sort of tell the story from their point of view.
We are talking tonight about Murder Ball. It's a documentary film. It's the sport, quadriplegic rugby. It is a new metaphor for struggle and triumph from the wheelchair or any other way. Mark Supan is with us tonight. He is a player and a tough, tattooed, goateed, inspiring one. Dana Adam Shapiro is with us. He's one of the co-directors of Murder Ball. It won the Audience Award at the Sundance Film Festival this year. You can join the conversation tonight on the 15th anniversary of the Disabilities Act. Is this a marker of how far disabled Americans have come to the freedom and capacity to play murder ball? Is this as compelling a spectator sport as any other? Is it compelling because of the wheelchairs or simply because of its speed, its violence, its beauty? We're at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about murder ball. Watch Zupan. He is a threat on the quadriplegic rugby court. He's with us tonight from Austin, Texas, along with Dana Adam Shapiro, co-director of Murder Ball. You can join us as well. Does Mark Zupan's mantra, "Don't pity me," apply to everyone in wheelchairs or just Paralympic athletes? And what's the lesson for anyone, disabled or fully abled, in Murder Ball? In the stories you're hearing tonight, we're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Mark, the kind of off-the-court stories are gripping here. I mean, you've got relationships that are really illuminating to learn about, but not only romantic relationships. Your relationship with Chris Iga, who was driving the truck that night, is an important story in this film, kind of coming to terms with each other and with what happened there. What was the problem, and where does it stand now, that relationship?
Well, I mean, it's not the easiest thing to first put your best friend in a wheelchair and then see him in the hospital.
Yeah.
I mean, I forgave him initially, right when he came into the hospital. He's like, looked like a dog with a tail between his legs. I said, what's your problem? There's no problem here, which I think kind of lightened up the mood some, but it's been an up and down relationship. I mean, there'd be times where we wouldn't talk for a year, then we'd talk for a year. We wouldn't for 2 years, and then we would for two. It's got to be difficult for him. I mean, for me, it's a physical thing. For him, it was, you know, emotional and a mental thing. Mm. But right now, we talk regularly. He's my best friend. He's like a brother to me. And it's been good. I mean, we were in Athens for the Paralympics, and then after the final game, I looked over to him. I'm like, "Hey, Chris, do you ever think we would be here?" He's like, "No, I thought we'd be somewhere, but not necessarily here." And I said, "Do you ever think this was the best thing that's ever happened to me?" He's like, "Huh?" I said, "Do you ever think this was a good thing? This is the best thing that's ever happened?" He's like, "Oh, wow." I mean, I coined the term. He's the quad father. He made me, and he kind of got, I guess you could say, peeved a little bit.
Yeah,
you can't say that. I'm like, "Chris, this is the truth. You got to be comfortable with it." So we started a website called quadfather.net, which is kind of funny.
Wow,
it's humorous.
You can see him wrestling with that combination of pride, and yet he was driving the truck that night, and all those two things going back and forth in his heart.
Right.
All the time. Let's take a call. Chris is calling from Wilson, Michigan. Hi, Chris. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks so much. Hey, yeah. I'm listening tonight. I'm really enjoying it. The thought that's occurred to me is, in our culture, I hope we eventually get to a place where we drop the term disabled out of our language altogether. That the people that I'm listening on to on your show tonight, my friends that use wheelchairs, people I see in my community, they're people that just happen to use wheelchairs to get around for their activities, for their life. That's it. They're not the chair. They're not a disability, an impairment, etc. Mm-hmm. And there's not one of us that doesn't have something. You know what I mean?
Sure. We've all got a flaw. We've all got something to deal with. They have more obvious things sometimes. But you raise a really interesting point, Chris. Thanks for your call. Let us pick it up. Mark Supan, how about the language that goes around these conditions? Are you satisfied with it? Can you imagine better language? Are you waiting for the day that disabled is not the term?
Well, I mean, to me, disabled is just, it's better than dropping the H word, the handicap.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm disabled, fine, but it doesn't mean I can't do whatever I want to do. I mean, that's a term that people will say, oh, well, you're disabled. Well, you know what, fine. If you think I'm disabled, I've done more than you.
Yeah.
In the most part.
But I haven't really heard a replacement term.
Well, I mean, yeah, you're going to hear, you know, in between, with each other, we'll call each other gimps and whatever else.
That's kind of, that's the inside joke. That's the in the locker room way, yeah.
If you don't know somebody and they call you that, then they're going to either get...
It's fighting words.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, I don't know. What else are you going to say? You're going to have a... Not normal parking spot or something.
Right, right. It gets pretty awkward. But you kind of fill that word disabled with capacity. Dana, have you thought about that, the issue of language? I mean, we've learned in this country over a long time that language matters. The names we put on things matters. Do you see the disabled surmounting the word? Have you got an alternate?
I don't, but, you know, I still say waitress and actress, so...
Right.
I don't know. I don't know that there's a. I mean, I guess handicap does seem a little bit strange, but it's. I think it's more what you mean behind it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there's the word. Sure. Okay. Disabled. As Mark said, what are you going to do? Say this is a parking spot for people who have. I mean, so it's more just the perception. You know, how you feel and how you treat them.
Yeah.
You know, you tend to either stare at them or look away from them. You don't treat them normally. You know, you look down on them literally. And of course, metaphorically, you know, people tend to sort of talk down to them. And I think that's really what matters.
Not after this film. After this film.
Well, and
that'd be great.
I mean, that's what's good about the film that they put together. It's not a woe is me Gimp movie. It's not, oh, please feel bad for me.
Yeah, not at all.
You know, no cue the violins. There's no there's no soapbox. And I guarantee you will laugh a lot.
Yeah.
It really turned into a... It went from a horror movie to a comedy, and then it sort of went to this very inspirational place, almost by accident, because we did everything we could not to make this, you know, quote, inspirational movie.
Well, at the end of the day, I'm afraid you failed there in a very wonderful way. Let's get a call. Harley is calling from Sudbury, Massachusetts. Hi, Harley. You're on the air.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
I just wanted to thank these people for making the movie. I'm a former wheelchair rugby player myself.
I was
on the national team in 1993. Actually played against Mark when he first started playing.
Yeah.
He may not remember.
Up,
How you doing, Mark?
I'm doing well, you?
Great movie. Enjoyed you and my old buddy Joe. I played
Sorry
with Joe
to hear
for a
that.
Long time. you know, what I wanted to say is that the movie's wonderful. I've seen it a couple times.
Yeah.
I've actually seen it with Joe, and it's just great. But my fear is that it's going to, you know, scare away a lot of people who might want to come and play recreationally.
Because it's cut so that it all looks so wild and violent.
It does. And, you know, the sport was, you know, it on a recreational level, it is just a wonderful thing to be doing when you're in a chair. And you know, there's about 30 guys who currently can play on the level that, you know, Mark and the rest of the national team can play. But there are 300 or 400 other players, men and women, around the country.
Yes.
Who play, you know, every weekend throughout the winter and in gyms and, you know, little schools and, you know, wherever they can find space. And, you know, I just hope the movie doesn't scare them away from the sport.
Harley, it's a great point. We're very glad you called. Thanks for sharing that with us. And yes, it doesn't have to be roller derby in every single context. We can see that's true. We did another call here. Cindy's calling from Medway, Massachusetts. Hi, Cindy, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for having me on the air.
Sure.
I just wanted to say I'm married to a rugby player.
Quad rugby?
A quad rugby player.
Okay,
yeah,
great.
My husband Adam has played with the team from Boston for years, and I just from the perspective of being married to somebody in a chair, it's an incredible thing. It's first of all, you get choice parking at Christmas time in shopping malls.
Right, right.
You always have a seat to sit on.
Right.
Absolutely, that's key.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's just I just think and also he's sexy. It's fun. It's always, you know, life is always fun because he looks at life in such a the same kind of way that Zupan does, because he's played rugby. He's done the Boston Marathon 4 times. Wow. He says the same thing. He would not in a second take away what's happened, because it has allowed him to do so many things, and I'm just so proud of him for that attitude.
And you're his wife. You know him intimately. You believe that your husband Adam really means that.
Absolutely, I had no doubt, because of the person he is,
yeah.
And I think rugby has helped him become that way too.
Yeah, it's amazing to see how even this challenge can help a human being step up in a very real way. Cindy, thank you so much for calling. Mark Zupan, I want to ask you about the final scene in the film. There's just a glimpse of it, but I found it very moving. You're at Fort Belvoir, I think it is, in Alexandria, Virginia, with American soldiers back from Iraq, beginning to deal with their own disabilities, and they're watching you play and listening to you describe what you do, and I could see hope growing in their faces in a way that just really made tears come to my eyes. What was that interaction like?
It was cool. These guys and ladies are, you know, giving their lives and putting their lives up to protect what we have, our freedom. And for us to give back if it's anything, if it's a little thing, show them, look, just because you're in a chair doesn't mean your life is over. It doesn't mean that you can't do whatever you wanted to do. Yeah, you might not be able to fight for the country, but there's other things in life to do. And to see that, and to see them just so curious and so hopeful and so intrigued, that was fun. It was cool just to give them back something for some hope, for some, I don't know.
Hope is the word, I think, there, Dana. That was quite a moment, as you captured it, with these soldiers really taking heart from the example of Mark and his mate, young men and young women, saying, wow, we can still be young, vibrant, and very alive here.
Well, you know, that spark of hope is something that we didn't get with our stars, because we started filming this movie, you know, they were 10 years into their accident. We never saw Zupan find rugby.
Right.
With Keith and with the veterans from Iraq, you see how this sport changes lives. And that was just something that we couldn't have captured because, you know, Zupan was injured 10 years ago, Bob, and he's got. And so that, like you were saying, you know, it is about that hope, and it's through Keith. And it's through the veterans that we really saw that spark.
And they deserve it very much on our minds. Dana Adam Shapiro, co-director of Murder Ball, thank you so much for being with us tonight. Thanks for making the film.
Oh, God, thanks. Thanks for having us.
And Mark Zupan, player for Team USA, civil engineer in Austin, Texas, and, gosh, one a heck of a guy. We know it from the film. Mark, thanks very much for sharing your story with us.
Thanks for letting me share it. Thanks for having me.
Wonderful to have you. Listeners, you can continue this conversation online at onpointradio.org. Click on forums. In a moment, the Americans with Disabilities Act turns 15. This is On Point. The Americans with Disabilities Act turns 15 today. Signed into law by then-President George H.W. Bush in 1990, the landmark federal legislation mandated civil rights protections for disabled Americans, including a guarantee of equal opportunity and access to employment, transportation, and state and local government services. For a look at the Act's impact and where American attitudes toward disability stand today, we're joined by Ruth Coker, professor of law at Ohio State University and author of The Disability Pendulum. Ruth Coker, thanks for being with us tonight.
My pleasure.
So here we are, 15 years on. Take us back and remind us what a big deal it was when this Act was passed in 1990, what it meant.
Oh, this was huge. This was a Civil Rights Act for people with disabilities. We had seen such a statute for women, for racial minorities, but really had not seen such a landmark statute for people with disabilities. And so, I mean, the celebration in 1990 was just enormous. The legislation passed Congress in a bipartisan atmosphere, overwhelming majorities in both the House and the Senate, and signed into law enthusiastically by President Bush.
And why did the disabled need this act?
Well, we had a smattering of laws in the various states, but we had no uniform national standard. And most states did not have any laws that that would make things like hotels and restaurants and supermarkets and drugstores, places that we all go to every day for amusement or our basic necessities in life, there were very few laws that made those places accessible. So a lot of people with disabilities found themselves confined to their homes much more than they would like to, because it was just so hard to get out in public and engage in what you and I might take for granted.
And in the 15 years since 1990, how great the changes?
Oh, the change has been enormous. I mean, we haven't seen the kind of changes that we would like to see in employment. A lot of people have commented that the unemployment rate for people with disabilities is still very, very high, probably over 50%. However, when we look at things like public transportation, sidewalks with now curb access, wheelchair ramps that we just find to be standard when we go to a hotel or a restaurant, the fact that you can go to a supermarket now and if you use a wheelchair, get down the aisle and actually shop for yourself, those kind of changes have been transformative. They've allowed people with disabilities to join everyone else in society and be out in public. And so we all see many more individuals with disabilities out in life enjoying themselves than we did 15 years ago.
And what's your sense, Ruth, of how American attitudes toward disability and the disabled have changed in those 15 years? Is it too soon to say, or have you seen real evolution?
Well, you know, it's hard to measure attitudes. There's certainly been a backlash. There's some people who feel that the employment sector has been too burdened by these changes. Others think that the hotel industry, the restaurant industry, has been too burdened by the changes. So there's been some backlash, and that happens with every Civil Rights Act. But I think if we look to the young people of today, they've been going to school with individuals with disabilities, sitting side by side with them in the classroom, and that probably is the biggest step that helps transform attitudes. When you actually meet people, get to know them, share jokes with them, go out to dinner with them, you start seeing that they're real people like everyone else. And so I think it's the fact that people with disabilities are out in public more that's really helped transform a lot of attitudes.
I don't know if you've looked at international attitudes or circumstances, Ruth, but I wonder if where America stands compared to other cultures at this point in terms of the integration of the disabled.
Well, we've been a real leader. After we passed our statute in 1990, Canada followed suit and passed very similar legislation. Great Britain has similar legislation. Australia has similar legislation. But I've had the opportunity to travel to Canada, Great Britain, Australia to talk about the Americans with Disabilities Act, and they've always been very interested in knowing what we've done. And we really have been a leader here, something we can be proud of. And similar kinds of measures have been passed in most of Western Europe, countries like ours.
And in the half minute we've got, what's the next horizon here?
Well, we need to do more with employment. You know, employment is still a challenge, and education is going to be necessary to make employment more successful. But the unemployment rate for individuals with disabilities is just not acceptable, and that's a nut we just haven't been able to crack yet.
What's the number?
Well, it depends how you define the disabled, but it's over 50%. It's higher than for any other minority group.
And you think that's on the basis of discrimination because of the disability?
No, I wouldn't say that. I'd say that it's a very complex issue. It's about training, opportunities, accommodations. No, it's not simply a discrimination matter, but it's unacceptable. People with disabilities want to have jobs. They want to take care of themselves. They want to pay taxes. And sometimes they just don't have that opportunity, and we need to do more to make that possible.
We can hear that desire. The Disabilities Act, Americans with Disabilities Act, turning 15 today. Ruth Coker, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Ruth Coker, professor of law at Ohio State University and author of The Disability Pendulum. She spoke with us from Columbus. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR, National Public Radio.